Well, good afternoon. I'm sitting here marveling at how many of you I haven't seen in a long, long time, and what a huge treat it is. Makes me so happy. And the families here too. Our everyday Tuesday night family is also here, and it just feels really, really good. I must say, y'all are slipping into it really well also. Last night we were walking meditation as if we were still trying to get here. Rushing around the Sendo. And this morning was so slow and quiet. It's like we're already here. I thought I'd talk about posture this afternoon because that's the bottom line for us. And it's what's most noticeable when we sit down is how can we do this and keep it going? And how do we deal with the great resistance that arises in our mind and our body that says, you must be kidding. You can't expect me to be doing this. And sometimes it feels like a kind of argument going on. Well, maybe I should just get up, or maybe I should just not come, or et cetera, et cetera. It's too hard, or it's unnatural, something like that. Actually, it's a very, very ancient posture. It's the very first of all the asanas in yoga. It was discovered probably by Neanderthal or Denisovans, some of those early people who weren't even quite what we call human. Because the necessity for doing this is so profound. There is no animal in the whole animal kingdom that runs around all the time. Most creatures, including most humans even today, don't work for a living, whether it's hunting down game as a tiger or a human, for more than a few hours every day. Most of animal life is spent in what we would call, in our culture, leisure. People just hang out. Women in this place, before we came, there were women in the tribe who lived just down the creek a ways, where the apple trees are still a few of them left in the orchard. Under the apple trees is a village where people lived. Eric has found a lot of artifacts from there. Those people did hunt for a few hours every day. The women went out with little baskets and collected acorns and brought them back and soaked them and turned them into meal, and that was food. But nobody worked the way we do. Nobody labored. So what we're discovering is a rediscovery. We're just reconnecting with our beginning and with the wisdom of being what we are. It's hard to grok. It's such a powerful culture that we live in, and we're all so driven. We must go, we must get, we must do. So when I speak about the enactment of Dharma, the enactment of our life, it isn't about that driven quality. It's about relaxing. It's about allowing. It's about being with. Will Johnson, a few years ago, gave us a marvelous book, us Zen students, called The Art of Sitting?
What's it called?
Posture of Meditation, just plain. It's a just plain book, and it's marvelous. And he talks about alignment and relaxation and resilience. Just three different qualities. When I began to sit almost 40 years ago, we were told about alignment. Said you have a straight back, and Dogen said this, you line up your ears with your shoulders and your nose with your navel, and you hold your head straight as if there were a string connected to the North Star. So you're being held by the heavens. And you tuck your chin and you don't move. So we sat like little rocks, or tried to, very stony and with a lot of pain, because it was a very bad thing to move and a very, very bad thing to relax. You weren't supposed to relax. You were going to get somewhere. Even though we were told there was no gaining idea in Zen, that we're not going to achieve anything, that we're already enlightened by our being able to sit this way, that even so, we need to do it with a will, with a very deep and powerful intention, and not to let it go for a minute. And so, of course, we were all stiff as boards and hurt ourselves a lot. Some people hurt their hips, some their knees, by sitting through a pain they should have not ignored. So thank you, Will Johnson, and all the other teachers who have come from other directions besides the samurai background. Because we inherited from the Japanese a warrior kind of tradition. The ones who really loved this were, and if this was considered, this practice, to be a way to overcome an enemy. You'd be so brave and so powerful and so strong and so selfless, you wouldn't think about being afraid. And there's many, many stories about fearless teachers and fearless samurai who just go out into the sharpness of the hard things and just do it. So that's what we were supposed to just do also. I started reading what Buddha said. I got very interested because I love writing and people's words, people's ability to try to understand and express how things are. I saw that Buddha didn't talk that way. He didn't talk about practice in such an unrelenting, fierce way. It was very simple. He just sat himself. He just sat himself down. He put himself through a lot and saw that it was not helpful. He saw that he could try and try and try, and he still wasn't enlightened. He humiliated himself. He suffered terribly, and it still didn't get him anywhere. And when he sat down, he saw that there was nowhere to get, that he was already there. And that's what he came to tell us, that we create our own suffering, but we're already there. We're imposing something on ourselves that we don't have to do. So alignment is very important. It really does make a difference how upright you can be. And it's also true that you may not be completely upright. I'm certainly not anymore. And as you get older, you find that you can't do the things that you used to be able to do. Still, it's possible. So the thing to do about alignment is align yourself as much as you can. Find your very best way and your best balance, because it's really about balance. How you can sit and breathe, and your breath is freed up, so that it comes and goes from your belly all the way up. Often we just breathe from the chest, and that's not enough. Wisdom is in our belly. We know this now. We know this scientifically. There's a whole other brain in our belly. And our connection with the whole of our body, back, our back and our front, to be aware, very, very aware of how we are aligned and how we're breathing. We begin to feel ourselves in a new way. Often we're very annoyed with our body. It's in the way, or it hurts, or it just is something we have to get dressed of and feed and take care of, but it gets to be a tedious kind of subject for us, I think. And to begin to just settle down and be your body and begin to appreciate it, the complexity of it, how amazing it is, how intricate, that all the parts that go into it are all working together so that we can be like this. But alignment isn't enough. And that's what the book is about. So, finding a way to relax and still not fall over, fall off the cushion, is how we do alignment. Or in a chair, and a chair is harder because we're way up high and there's not so much holding us. When you're sitting on a cushion, you have a lot of stability. You've got your knees on the ground, if you're lucky, and your butt is slightly up in the air so that you're really in place. You can feel like you're connected to the ground. You're breathing with the ground in a way. The breath is coming all the way up through the ground and then going back out. So that it's easier. It takes more attention when you're sitting in a chair. When I first had to sit in a chair, I was amazed. I thought, oh, I could just get up and walk right out the door any minute. What's keeping me here? And then I had to kind of work at it and think, well, I think I'm here. And so then stayed. But it's a little wavery, much more wavery than it is when you're sitting on this cushion. Appreciate the cushion while you can sit on it, because you may not be able to for the rest of your life. But there's always a way. You can always sit lying down as well, or walking, or standing. It's not a limited kind of exercise. It's a lifetime activity. So relaxing, they call it surrendering to gravity. Just let gravity hold us. We take it for granted, don't we? Or we think there's too much when we drop something. Oh, it's too much gravity around here. But it's what's holding us. Nobody really knows what it is. Isn't that cool? But it's what part of what we are. So you can trust it. I said last night, trust yourself and trust gravity. You're being held. Wherever you are, however you are being held. For myself, I've found that relaxing, I relax everything except my jaw. Part of the instruction, the basic instruction, is to have your teeth closed, your tongue resting against your front teeth and up against the roof of your mouth. This helps the water that accumulates in your mouth to trickle down without you having to swallow. If you're sitting properly, the saliva that forms will just take care of itself if you have it that way. But it needs to be closed. Otherwise, if it's too relaxed, the jaw, then everything gets lost in there. Everything kind of falls apart. In Rinzai practice, they clench the jaw. And Koban always said that you could tell a Rinzai monk just at a glance, because he had these huge muscles on the side of his head from sitting like that. But Soto way is just to gently keep it closed. So there is a little tension, and it just feels to me like it's enough tension to keep everything kind of in place and strong without being tense. If you put too much tension in your body, and you can ask yourself, why is my shoulder going up like that? Why does my knee feel like that? You'll find yourself, as your mind is getting tense about something, that your body will tense up also. And you can follow it. You can actually feel it as it develops. And you can let it go. Poof. Oh. So relaxing is a kind of practice within the practice of just letting the tension go as it builds. Finding a way to softly breathe. Finding a way to open your heart. And then there's resilience, because that's a matter of the truth of our body, that it's always moving. It's always moving. It's throbbing. It's beating. It has to do that. Of course, the heart affects it. The breath affects it. The coursing of the blood in us, all the wetness in us, is all flowing like a river. So, of course, it's all happening. And as we sit, we feel that. And we adjust. And we adjust just a little bit. We don't have to adjust a lot. But we don't have to stay rigid and unmoving. But let the breath breathe itself. Just let it do what it wants to do. And Buddha said, if it's a short breath, let it be a short breath. If it's a long breath, let it be a long one. Don't try to control your breath. There are a lot of breath practices, many, many yoga practices about the breath. And they're all very helpful. And a lot of them are kind of fun. They energize you. But that's not what we're doing. We're just breathing and allowing the breath to be. Letting it be what it wants to be. What the whole system needs at this moment. And just be this moment with it. So they talk about selflessness, and in a way you can imagine that this is a selfless practice, because it's just about what we're doing in the moment. We don't have to call it my practice or me. In fact, when we do, then we get self-conscious and maybe don't like what we're experiencing or think we're not doing a good job. That's one of the hardest parts of the way our mind works, that we begin to criticize ourselves even before we criticize others. Oh, there's something wrong with me. We don't have to do that. Just have the resilience to notice when it happens And whatever is happening in your mind, just in your mind, bow to it and let it pass through. If it's a very big subject, a really heavy-duty subject, it may not pass easily through, and that's fine too. But study. Study as if it were a scientific study. It's not personal. Our life is not personal in the end or in the beginning. We didn't ask to be born. We just appeared. And we appeared in this shape, in this form. And we've been adjusting and enduring it ever since. Mystified mostly. What is this? What's happening? So sitting down in this easy way and just breathing quietly and breathing together in this way especially helps us so much. Helps us to discover how we can be trusted. How our life itself can be trusted. How we're held. So there are probably many more things to say about sitting, and you probably have questions, and others probably have discoveries that you've made about the best way. There are a lot of different best ways depending on what our situations are. Some of us are long and thin, and some of us are short and squat, and some of us are young, and some of us are old, and so all of those things determine how we do this. So if you have tricks, share them. And if you have questions, this is the time for them.
Similar to when we had our Dokusan in the summer, came back to California and had a glorious month, and there was a lot of feeling of the heart being open and landing, you know, somewhere that feels like home. And then, so as I've been sitting today, that lovely experience that I've been having has changed, and so now there's more the feeling of like rawness, right, which is what I would call more like a brokenheartedness. And I'm curious about the opening of the heart and how that relates to, you know, the brokenheartedness or what is, you know, the experience, I guess, of practicing with this and practicing through it. And how much to push and bring myself to it, and how much to rest as well, just given the complicated body-mind that I have.
Well, we're full of impulses. And to distinguish what is impulse and what is wise is always what we have to do. Dennis brings me a lot of cookies. And impulsively, I've been eating those cookies and thinking, I don't think I should be doing this. But they're so good. So we have that quality, and we, some of us have it a lot, and especially around the heart, about affection, that we can be over the top and doing things that aren't really good for us at all. That isn't what open-heartedness means. Open-heartedness does not mean being in love. It's a much wiser thing than that. I hate to say that to young people, but the truth is that in love is one quality that's very precious and wonderful, but it's not what real relationship is. Real relationship does not break us. It does not hurt us. It nourishes us. If you find yourself in a relationship that's hurting you, it's probably not a wise place to be, or needs attention and help in order to turn into something deeper and more long-lasting. In love doesn't last. Almost always it doesn't last. It's really, in the end, a little meaningless. It just becomes a kind of pleasure like a cookie. It's wonderful. Feels great. But it's not... helpful. Does that make sense? It's hard. I think we confuse the bodhisattva way with this, that bodhisattva means that we just open ourselves to whatever comes along. And that's a dangerous way to go into the world. All of us are really smart people, and we're wise. And Buddha's suggestion is to have a very clear view of what you're doing before you do anything. That's the first of the path. Have a very clear view. See what you're doing and see if it's the wise thing to do. So it's important to practice our wisdom and our insight, and not indulge ourselves just because it feels good. An open heart doesn't mean that. I'm sorry. Otherwise, it gets very tangled, doesn't it? It gets all mixed up.
Angie, I think you once said, I think it was you, you know, what of our minds squirts thoughts, that's what minds do. And I'm relating that to leisure because I find my mind never wants to turn off. Even if I'm tired, it's still, you know, I find it very hard to go to sleep or to stay asleep. I think some of it is greed of mind, like I only have finite time left and this lecture's on the radio. That book's to read. And could you speak to that a little more about you how to make them, how to, you know, short of drinking beers or an hour and a half of Tai Chi and two hot baths?
Well, the Buddhist
mind that never wants to turn off.
The Buddha said that suffering means being dissatisfied. So our greed is based on our dissatisfaction. If you're not satisfied with one cookie but want four or five, or six lectures and whatever it is that is keeping you awake, you'll just keep indulging yourself over and over again and then regretting it. So that, again, requires some wisdom and insight to really see yourself clearly and see what's helpful and useful for yourself. And take care of yourself. We don't just do things automatically, and Zen doesn't put us in an automatic state. We need to pay really close attention to who we are and how we're navigating in the world. And do it wisely and well. Otherwise, it's just a waste of time. You're just frittering it and going blah, blah, blah all the time. You don't have to. That's the trick. We don't have to do that. But it means we have to. It feels like a sacrifice. Oh, but I want that thing. I want that thing too. Oh, and that, look at that. We can't, it just doesn't add up. We're happiest when it's just one thing at a time. Cultivate it and let it go deep. Then it's truly nourishing. Otherwise, it's just another cookie. A good question. We all do it. We're built like that.
Well, and the mind to be leisurely. I mean, even here sitting all 5 days or whatever one can do here is a good trend. I know it's sort of giving me an opportunity to kind of recalibrate.
Yeah.
But even though I was exhausted last night from getting here and sitting and so on and unpacking, the brain just still even trying to slow it down in bed.
It'll slow itself down. You can't slow it down. Just let it go. Just don't get engaged with it. Peter?
Angie. Well, I didn't quite start sitting as early as you did, but I still got 40 years in. So I was surrounded by those who said, don't move.
Yeah.
It wasn't Koban. I think it was the Western samurai.
Yes.
That had that. It took me 2 knee operations and a bad back to learn the, you might call it trick, gravity tricks. That it's nothing that most of us don't know. But I was sort of forced into yoga at that point. And it's permitted me to continue to sit 30 more years.
Yeah.
Back then, we didn't have periods in the sesshin for yoga, which we have had in the last 10 years, thanks to your wisdom, and we see it on the sesshin schedule. My suggestion or experience is, especially for those of you starting out, and no matter what your body type is, yoga is a great companion practice to our zazen, and take advantage of opportunities both during sesshin and certainly outside sesshin to be able, various yoga teachers I know in the room that offer classes, and it's certainly a way to keep our body able to sit, whether it be on the zapu or in a chair. I think we can do it a lot longer, a lot less suffering if we incorporate yoga in our practice.
Absolutely. It's also something like zazen that we can do alone at home. It's always available. We can do it out at the beach. We can do it. We can sit, do yoga, all these practices wherever we happen to be. It's not so elaborate that we have to go some special place and do it. The reason we come together is that we're doing it together enhances it and confirms it for us. We confirm each other as we sit together this way. Oh yes, this is what it is. And this is, oh, there's me. And there I am. Oh, here we are all. This untalkaboutable something. It feels very good. And then we go home and we can continue our practice alone or with a group, a small group somewhere. Yeah. Yeah, thanks to Dennis. Well, it's past the yoga time unless we get up and start to do it pretty quick. But it can overlap the next sit, so we'll just continue. Thank you all.